Welcome to the Spirit Aligned Leadership Program Legacy Leader Podcast. Today, we feature Dr. Henrietta Mann from the Cheyenne Arapaho Tribe of Oklahoma.
Pivawanut, good morning. Good day, everyone. My name is Gail Small. I am from Lame Deer, Montana, and my Cheyenne name is Vihonut, which means head chief woman. I'm very honored today to be interviewing Henrietta Mann, a very, very dear relative who is from Montana and Oklahoma. Henry, would you please introduce yourself?
Kibishif. Ho'oyster, oh, not nice, chisivi. No, not sister. No, hitsio he fatanin na hista na hakahano. Not them. Hapot not die shivinath. Na 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 miha hoister musa. No, niho e. Mo if na ham. Mimia is chisivi na nako e. Isheva. Na namshim. Well, what has sit on me? Na much words if not. How about it's here? It was done here. It's here. Have I done it? I have said a good day to you. My Cheyenne name is Prayer Cloth Woman, or the woman who comes to offer prayer. Shorthand, Prayer Woman. I was born here in the state of Oklahoma and am known to the rest of the people as the having been born a hair rope woman, meaning that we continue to weave our ropes from the buffalo hair long after others had converted to using the rope that they bought from those strangers who came to live from us. So I am technically a hair rope person, although I lived and taught for some 40 years in the state of Montana with my kinspeople, the Northern Cheyennes, the Morning Star people of Montana. And I came back to live in the place where I was born, in Oklahoma. So that is who I am. I said my father was Horse Road. My mother was Day Woman. My grandfathers are Spotted Horse and Deer. Tragically, I never knew either one of my grandmothers. Very blessed by having been named for my paternal grandmother, Ho'oyster'ona, Prayer Cloth Woman. And my maternal grandmother was Bertha Powderface, Piven. I never knew her. Her Cheyenne name, and so I do know my great grandmother, my paternal great grandmother, whose name was Homa Iwoista, or Homa Oista, White Buffalo Woman. I also know of my maternal great grandmother, whose name was Vister, V-I-S-T-E-R. I often questioned my mother as to whether that was visitor or asked what it meant in Cheyenne, and she said she was just visitor.
Henrietta speaks about the Sand Creek Massacre and how her family survived it.
Both of my great-grandmothers were survivors of the Sand Creek Massacre of 1864 and the massacre along the Ouachita River in 1868. If those two women had not survived and had those brave hearts that they do, I might not have been here. The grandmother known as Vister was wounded at Sand Creek. The story is told that her uncle found her pony and threw her up on the pony and hit it on its flanks and told her to flee for safety. And she rode the pony away, but before she got too far, she remembered her little brother, turned that pony around and went back as bullets were whizzing around her, found her little brother, pulled him up behind her and turned around and fled to safety, but took a bullet in the back of her leg and her calf. But they fled and they got away. And my mother said she was always fascinated by that deep wound that she carried in the back of her leg, and would often sit under the table and rub that bullet wound that she carried from the Sand Creek Massacre. And her grandmother would just let her feel it. And my mother always told me that at Sand Creek, that they were very happy. They thought they were in a place of safety, and that they played games way into the night, and thinking that they were in a place of peacefulness because the soldiers had told them to go down to Crank Camp at Sand Creek. And they played long into the night, little suspecting that the Methodist minister named John Shevington was bringing his troops of 700 men to surprise them in an early morning dawn attack that resulted in over 100 deaths of Cheyenne men, women, and children, whose camp flew the flag of the United States of America and also carried a white flag of peace that was quickly hoisted on a very tall lodge pole. But he surprised them after a woman who had gone out to get some water heard what she thought was a herd of buffalo approaching the camp. But instead, they were soldiers, and she warned those. And Black Kettle, who is hailed as the most peaceable of all Cheyenne peace chiefs, gathered his children and people around him, and knowing that he had been told that no one would ever fire upon the flag of the United States of America. And he gathered them around the flag, but the firing started, and of course the white flag of peace also fluttered around that flag of our country. And when the shooting was over and others fled, mostly women and children lay dead, there were two congressional investigations and one military investigation, and the savagery that was found and discovered by those investigations belies even human imagination, where fetuses were cut from the wombs of their mothers, genitalia were cut from the men and women, and some of the genitalia were used as saddle horn covers, hat bands, and the scalps of the people were paraded into what was then called Denver City and were put on display in Apollo Theater in downtown Denver. And Sand Creek Massacre has been hailed as the most savage massacre of the peoples, the indigenous peoples of this land. I often think of that massacre and think of the bravery and the courage of our grandparents, but three generations removed from me, who had to endure that attack of the United States of America and its military that day. And for us to have survived at all speaks to the brave-hearted women, men, and children that grew up and gave birth and gave life to us today, so that we survived and still carry that courage, that bravery, but the blood memory of the savagery and inhumanity of people that valued land over people, that valued prosperity over human lives. And unfortunately, too many days I think of this concept of manifest destiny that, to my way of thinking, is unfortunately alive and well today. So Black Kettle brought his people, his band with him south into Indian territory, out of the way of the
fighting that occurred because the Northern Cheyenne and some of the Lakota were bound to take revenge for Sand Creek. And Black Kettle, being the peaceful leader that he was, wanted to take his people out of further tragedy. And so he brought his people down into Indian Territory to, along the Lodgepole River, which was their winter encampment. And because he had signed the Treaty of Fort Wise 10 years after the Cheyennes and Arapahoes had signed the 1851 Treaty of Fort Laramie, in which they had reserved for their use a vast area of land that covered portions of the states of Wyoming, Nebraska, Colorado, and Kansas, and the entire Rocky Mountain Eastern Front, and which by signing the Treaty of Fort Wise 10 years later, gave up the bulk of that hunting territory of Ayers, the Cheyenne, and Arapaho for a very small reservation in southeastern Colorado, 1/13 the size of what had been our Fort Laramie lands. He was ridiculed by the people. There were some of the societies that were very, that disliked him very much for having signed away the treaty lands. So he was told, he camped at the westernmost edge of the Ouachita River, away from the rest of the people. It is said that the camps extended for about 15 miles east down the Ouachita River, but his camp was at the westernmost edge, away from the rest of the people. And it was that camp there that almost 4 years to the day of the 4 years later, after the day of the Sand Creek, that his camp was once more attacked, this time under the command of George Armstrong Custer and his men, the boy general of the Civil War. And this time, unfortunately, Black Kettle was killed, and my two great-grandmothers were once more in that camp. And this time, my paternal great-grandmother, White Buffalo Woman, I have more knowledge of her, little of visitor, and her mother was quite elderly by that point in time, and her oldest son, a sub-chief, who was the only chief to stay with Black Kettle, whose name was Chief Little Rock, was also killed along with Black Kettle, and sent her youngest daughter, White Buffalo Woman, to along into the river, so the children to jump into the icy cold river. Now, Custer had a band that accompanied him for some reason or another, and as his soldiers attacked Black Kettle's camp, coming in from four directions, the band started playing Gary Owen. And they played that song for only a little bit because it was so bitterly cold in the Ouachita River that the instruments froze to their lips. And he had set up his sharpshooters along each side of the Ouachita River. And as the children and the women jumped into those frigid waters of the Ouachita under the banks, the sharpshooters began shooting at them. And the children, White Buffalo among them, reached a bend in the Ouachita where they had to come out of the water and cross a dry spot to get to before they could wade on down the stream. And Little Rock saw the children, and he and the men, some of his men, tried to protect the children, and he was killed, and the children were taken captive and marched back. And ultimately, the shooting caused some of the warriors from the other camps down the river. As I told you, there were 15 camps, 15 miles down the Ouachita, and they came to see what was happening and were looking down on the buttes overlooking the Ouachita. And there was a huge, huge lodge where they began to put the prisoners, because it was about that time that Philip Sheridan and the military had instituted their new military strategy of total war. In this strategy, they were to kill all men. They were to take all women captive, with children as well. They were to destroy the winter food supply. They were to burn all the possessions of the people, and they were to kill the entire pony herds. And of course, up to that point, the military had never attacked in the winter. This was completely new to the Southern Plains Indians for Custer to have attacked on a November 27th day in 1868. And so since that new strategy called for taking captives, ultimately Custer took 53 women and children captives, among them my great-grandmother. It is said that Custer chose a beautiful lodge covering, a teepee covering for himself, and burned the other 50, burned their entire winter food supply, all their personal possessions. My great-grandmother, White Buffalo Woman, was a healer of horses. And much to her dismay, it was quite a shock to her system when they started killing all their ponies. They said there were an estimated, some people say, around 800 to 900 ponies. Others say, oh, they were only 600, whatever they were, from 600 to 700, 800 horses. Custer's men killed them. Promised some to the scouts that day, and some of the soldiers replenished their ponies, and he put some of the prisoners on the horses. Some said that they walked, really, and made as if he was going to go down the river to attack the other camps, and so the soldiers ran, the Indian warriors fled back to their camps, afraid that Custer was going to attack them. About that time, darkness had fallen. And so Custer then turned once it was dark and marched his soldiers and captives back to Camp Supply, north to Camp Supply. And the prisoners of war he had taken, 53 of them, were captive for 6 months. But that day, the Cheyenne ponies also were killed, and you can go out and visit at the Ouachita Battlefield Historical Site, and there you also can visit the killing fields of the horses. And it was devastating to us as a people because we were one with our horses. The horses, we were told by our great prophets, weak medicine would carry us into the blue vision, the blue shadow distances where we would travel and become one with this animal. And so this prophet, sweet medicine, told us much of what we would encounter today, that we would come to a different people, that these strangers would change our ways of life, that they would want this land from us, that they would take it, that they would come with a stick that speaks with a voice of thunder, and they would kill our animals, that we would come to eating a different kind of animal, and that we would call it the Ilhadua, which is the white man's buffalo, this cow, and that our ways of life would be changed, and that we would come to eating something that they brought that would look like sand but would taste very sweet, and that they would change our ways of life. They would want our land, and they would take it, and that we had to remember our ways. And Sweet Medicine assured us that we would remain and survive as a people so long as we remembered his teachings, the ways that we hold on today by continuing to practice our ceremonies, by continuing to observe our male ceremony and the sacred items kept in the South by the Southern Cheyenne, our most sacred arrows that protect us as a people, Cheyennes, all Cheyennes, North and South. And they have been ceremonially renewed. We as people have been renewed. We can begin life anew. It can. Our world has, we as a people have been made new. It can. And that so long as we practice and remember those ceremonial ways, we will live as a people, not just those holy arrows that come to us out of Bear Butte. The ceremonial, the sacred, the spiritual center of our universe, Noawus, Bear Butte, which stands on the periphery of the Black Hills, where we go today to make our offerings, continue to make our pilgrimages to that sacred place where our people still go to fast, to pray, to make their offerings, to seek guidance for their heart, to go to honor the sacred rootedness that keeps us rooted to this land, our spiritual rootedness, our foundational spiritual ways as people, where we continue to go to pray, to fast. And so those sacred objects come from that place. And we also had our sun dance, where we spiritually renew the world, our world renewal ceremony. And it's our female ceremony. The arrow renewal ceremony is our male ceremony. And our world has been renewed. We have been renewed as a people so that we can begin life anew again. And where we can, the world has been rebalanced. We have carried out our responsibility as Ma'il, the creator, told us to by sending us these two good, holy men, Sweet Medicine and Erect Horns. Erect Horns brought us the sacred buffalo hat, and he and a woman journeyed to a mountain far to the north, a mountain from a distance that looked very dark because of the trees that grow along the side of it. Today, that mountain, because it looks so dark and is said to be somewhere near the Pipestone Quarry in Minnesota, is now associated with the Bear Butte as well. So our world has been renewed. We have been renewed as a people. We have carried out our mandates, our sacred mandates, and our responsibility as a people. And by doing that, we have assured our continuity as a people. And the prophets have told us, so long as we do that, that we as a people will live as long as the sun and the moon and the stars and the earth.
Henrietta speaks about the four stages of life.
And of course, we pray for all people and for the whole world, so that life will continue. And we remember our responsibility to all peoples and to all life. And we look at life in so many, in such simple ways. We know that as we walk through life, that we make four stops on that way of life. And there are many people that have their own ways of viewing life. We are told, and sometimes I remember your uncle, John Woodenlegs, coming to the University of Montana and doing the cedar ceremony for us. And I remember him quite fondly. And he always told us and prayed for us, because the cedar ceremony is a prayer for life. And he always did this ceremony for you students at the University of Montana. And I remember that it's a prayer for long life for all the people. He always prayed for one child. He remembered a child being carried in the womb of, and since he was an
He said he always said he was an old man. I thought he was a very handsome man who carried himself with a lot of dignity and a grace with a lot of knowledge. He always began that seat of prayer, envisioning and telling us to think of this beautiful woman who was pregnant with a child, bringing this new life to us as a people, and carrying that baby with a great deal of love and care, and doing things in a very quiet and peaceful and loving way as she was bringing this new life to the people to join us on this road that we are all walking today, caring for that baby in a very loving, peaceful way, not engaging in anything that would harm that child in the way that we have to we are concerned about today when we think of some of our young women who engage in alcohol and unfortunately sometimes causing their babies to come into this world with fetal alcohol syndrome or having to come into this world of all things addicted to drugs. That is not the way that it should be. We have been taught to bring those babies in just so pure, to think always good thoughts and to just eat the most proper food. And strangely, one of the no-nos in earlier times was to, as we were told, to never eat anything that's long and stringy, even like spaghetti, or to eat the entrails of an animal because we were afraid the insides of a cow, because we didn't want anything to get wrapped around the neck of a baby. So there were just some things that you didn't eat because you didn't want anything symbolically to interfere with the birth of a child. You didn't want the umbilical cord to get wrapped around the neck of the baby. So there are just some things that were avoided in that whole process. You didn't eat, for example, strawberries of all things or berries because you did not want the baby to be born with a birthmark. And my mother said, I had to have strawberries. She would often cry because in the summertime, I often get a red mark on my forehead. That comes from the strawberries I ate when I was carrying you. I just have to have these strawberries. Well, I know for other cultures, strawberries are medicine. But for us, those were just things that you avoid doing during pregnancy, just during pregnancy. So there's a way that the mother had to be to just think good thoughts, peaceful thoughts, loving thoughts, so that the life that comes to us as a people is perfect. And your Uncle John Woodenlakes always made sure in talking to these young college-age students that he emphasized that. And so that when the baby is born, new life comes to us. The analogy that is used that the baby is a tiny little plant, just a plant, just like you have a house plant. And you know that you have to nurture that plant in the infancy of life. You have to give that plant water, and you just have to give it so much. You have to keep it vital. You have to keep it growing. You have to take care of it. It can't take care of itself. You that are gardeners have to be so careful that you give it the right amount of sunlight, the right amount of water, that you know when to put it into the shade. The same way you take care of a baby, that because that baby is a fragile plant and it does not yet have its roots, those spiritual roots that have to go down into this earth. And that's the first stage of life. Plants, we're like, a baby is like a fragile young plant. That's the first stage of life.
when they're like tiny, fragile plants. And as this new life matures, and when you think of this new life, it's really, and you're praying for this new life, it's a really a prayer for all the babies and everyone in the world that's in this stage of life. You might be praying for one, but you're praying for all. And you pray for this baby as this baby. And of course, you're praying to the east. And the east is that opening into this world through which the spirit comes. It's the opening into this earth world in much the same way that our lodge, our ordinary lodge, as we call the teepee, the vid, it opens in that same direction. Our lodge and the circle, when we make our circle, has a very slight opening in the east. It's never closed. Our circle is never closed at Cheyenne's. Other people's are closed, but it's symbolic of that opening into this earth world of ours, this opening that we have in our lodge, so that the spirit comes in here, goes around the earth circle, and can go back to live in the world of spirit. When we, as Sundance women, paint our women with these sun roads around our wrists and our ankles, we never close that circle. We leave an opening. There's always an opening. It's never closed. And so then as this little baby grows and moves to the southeast, and then you pray for that baby to have good teachers in life, to have teachers that nurture the mind, to nurture the heart, to have good playmates, to have good companions, to have good grandparents that love this child, and to always have loving family, and to have loving teachers as this child advances around this earth. And then go to the south as this child begins. And we say that for the first 12 years of life, our children should never be expected to be anything but children, that they're learning. They're like little sponges absorbing all of life around them. But we should let them be children. And I think, you know, we give our children up to schools at age 6. We turn our children away. We give them to the Anglo world. And yet for us as Cheyennes, we say, you know, for 12 years, that's a time we should love and nurture them. First 12 years to be happy. Then they step into the time when they begin their education. And it's when they're no longer little plants. They become like willow branches. But willow branches, those same willow branches that we use to build the frame of a sweat lodge, as we all know, are very supple. They can be shaped and formed. And they come from, they grow along the river. They're supple. And they have in them salicylic acid. I thought I turned this off, I'm sure. And that's a salicylic acid has the same kind of content that Bayer aspirin took, and brands as aspirin. They took it from us. And we use it for what? Headaches, stroke, against blood clotting, but willows. So our young people are like willow branches from age 12 to maybe 29. That's a long period of time for them to learn. And of course, that's when they are opposite the old people. The old people really that time have a strong influence on teaching them. teaching them our ways of Cheyenne, teaching them how they are to be, teaching them what life is like, our storytellings, our history, our values about life, about understanding how we should be, how we should not be, how about our prophets, about our value systems, about having being courageous, about being kind. It's when we learn how we are to be as Cheyenne people. Well, how we learned about this world out there, how we learned about what role modeling is, how we should be like that good woman out there who's always kind to children, who invites you to her house. Look how good she is to her husband, how well he dresses. Look at that man, how he provides for his family. Look how they're always, when you go into ceremony, invite people to eat with them, how they always have concern for those less fortunate in the tribe. You know, we put a lot of effort, I mean, a lot of emphasis upon role modeling, because we know we're teachers to everyone in the tribe, how we look upon being a good person, because we know everyone is looking at us. And we like to have fun, and there's a way to do that. But there's also a way to develop this goodness and to always have this care for everyone else in your nation, in the community. To always be good, and you know that you have to be good, but because this community, my sister Ruby and I used to talk about the community shadow, because you don't want to do anything bad, because that community shadow has a long memory. If you do something bad, it's always there. And so you've got to always strive to be the best that you can possibly be. That's all you can be, to just be the best person you can possibly be for her. The only thing that I think, the only thing that we can do, and our mother would tell us this, you just have to be the best Cheyenne you can possibly be. That's your lifelong purpose, nothing more. And so you can do that until about age 29. Then you move into what would be the adult time of life, from about age 29 to 65, adulthood. That's a long time. That's a time to do. That's a time when you raise your family, and that's when you really, you participate in the life of the community. You join your societies, you join your clubs, you become parents. And even at that point, as you get older, you become grandparents. But it's the time that you start to strengthen your spiritual life, because now you come through infancy and childhood to being young people, and now you're in adulthood, and you're at that age where now the only thing left is being an elder into that age of wisdom before you go back to live in the world of spirit. You've got about half your life nearly behind you, and you live a good life in your community. You take care of others, you participate in your ceremonial ways, you rear your family, you take care of your parents, you put into practice all that you have learned in these other two stages of life. You strengthen your spiritual life at this point in time, all the time. And then you teach your children, your grandchildren. You live the life of a Cheyenne. You go to your powwows. You go to your ceremonies. You support the people when they need help. You live. You live the life of a good community member. And then you step over at about 65, and these are not strict timelines. Then you become an elder. And for us, elder is a time of respect. Sometimes it's called an age of wisdom. It's a time that we all strive to reach. It's a time when actually there are only two categories in life, elders and the rest of the community. We all want to live a long life. And we don't want to be useless. We want to be helpful. We want to pass what knowledge we might have, we have accumulated back down to all of us that walk behind us. And, oh, by the way, when you reach that time of maturity, you're like a cottonwood tree, a great, big, tall, majestic cottonwood tree. A cottonwood tree is so sacred because it's that cottonwood tree that stands as a center pole in our Sundance Arbor. And so all of you adult Cheyennes, adults, are these cottonwood trees, majestic. My favorite tree is a cottonwood tree. You're a majestic cottonwood tree, Gail. A beautiful one. A strong one. You hold us up. Me, now that I'm in an elder, I'm a branch, I'm a stick. I'm a stick so that you can. I'm like a stick. You throw my teachings. You can throw them into the fire of life and you all learn from them. My teachings you throw into the fire of life so that you all can learn from me. Because I'm getting way over here back to that opening. Mm-hmm. And one of these days, I'm going to take that one step beyond life to death, where I'm going to join and go on out back to that beautiful, wonderful place where all the Cheyennes that have ever lived, except those that commit suicide, back in that circular camp in the stars, where everything is peaceful and loving and happy, where there's no time. So this is the giving time of my life where I'm to take what I've accumulated this whole time, these 86 years, and give back. It's also a peaceful time. And it's a happy time. It's a peaceful time for me to share what I have learned along this time. So I am that dried cottonwood stick. Who knows how long I have, but until then, it's a good time. It's a time of calm and peace because, yeah, that's where I'm going to. That's where we all go. That's where your mother and father are. That's where your Uncle John is. He prayed for all of us in prayer. For that little baby that came to live. He prayed for all of us when he did that ceremony for us. Many times at the University of Montana, praying for each one of us in those stages of life.
As you were talking, Henry, a lot of stories came to my mind. The story of my Uncle John Woodenlegs, when he would come and cedar the students. You know, I was in the fourth grade at Lame Deer Elementary School, and there was about probably 30 students in my class, and all of us were Cheyenne. And I remember he came in to the library, we were in the library, and he had all this cedar, and he was putting cedar branches, big cedar branches, on top of all the library books. You know, like the bookshelves. So he was putting these cedar, big cedar branches up there all around. And then he got done And he came over and he told us that he was going to pray for us as that these books that he was putting cedar branches on would help us and teach us a good road. And so he did that cedar ceremony. I remember it very visibly when I was in the fourth grade. He started that in my life very young. And then another time he came to our school and he walked into my classroom and we were all standing up doing the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States flag. And my teacher was a retired army man, very well known on the reservation. His name was Nick Sullidge. He was a very tough teacher. And he used to be a boxer. I'll give you an idea of his character. But Johnny came in, my Uncle John, and he stood there and he watched all of us, little Cheyenne kids. There was about 30 of us, all doing the Pledge of Allegiance, the United States flag. And after we got done, he walked to the front of the room and he said, I want to tell you, all you children here, one thing. We have our own flag. We have our own song. He said, and you remember that. And I remember this army teacher was just like puffing up, like, and he just turned to the teacher and he said, I came here to get my granddaughter, Gail, come with me. And so I remember I had jumped up from the class, walking out the door with him. But I was, that memory of those two things have always stayed with me.
I think of the times that I have come through and the times that our children are going to come through. And I thought, oh my gosh, the times that our grandparents have walked through, I thought, goodness, what did they think about when and how much joy they must have had when they first came to the Mississippi River. Oh my gosh, what did they think? The same way that I guess I felt when I first saw the Pacific Ocean. I never knew there was such water in this world. What did they think about when they saw their first car? And I read that story, Grandfather and the Popping Machine, and how the grandfather went to Billings and got a car, but he didn't know how to stop it, and it had to stop itself when he ran out of gas. The things that we see when man first walked on the moon, and we wondered about the wiseness of a rock back from our grandmother, the moon. The things that you have seen as a young girl growing up on the Northern Cheyenne and finishing law school in Oregon. Unfortunately, the degradation of the climate. Resiliency. Resiliency. We have all had to have that, our grandparents. Having to make up new words in our language, having to adapt our ceremonies in ways so that we could continue to perform them, to carry out our sacred mandates. We know that. We know how precious life is. We know that our beloved grandparents have had to endure so much. We know that you all have had to endure much to get your education. I look at those of you that I taught at the University of Montana. Beautiful women, all of you. Brilliant women. My gosh, you know, it's just an honor for me to have had the opportunity to teach you. And I guess as I look back over it, I've run across this one term. and it suits you very well. All of you. Luana, Kathy, oh gosh, all of you, all of you. You're all border walkers. And I thought, I've known a lot of border walkers in my classroom. And you all walk between these cultures so well, and you never give up who you are. That's always the constant. That's a foundation. But you can go out in this place and you navigate so well. But this is always here. You go between them. But you also offer knowledge between those two worlds. The knowledge of what this environment, what it is, how it has sustained us. And how it has to continue to sustain your grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And you translate that between two cultures, two ways of life. These are the gifts that your great-granddaughters are going to have to continue to do. And at the same time, whatever happens, they have the abilities to overcome whatever it is that this world out there is going to impose upon them because of this cultural knowledge that you all carry and have walked and continue to carry here. You open that road that you all have journeyed forever with your grandparents as you walk this earth. And beyond that, you know, as we always say, you all stand on the shoulders of generations and generations and generations of my phenomenal knowledge keepers. I stand for me on a lot of them, and I know I stand on the shoulders of so many great, 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 great grandmothers, but I have had the privilege of knowing a great grandmother, white buffalo woman, knowing her. I've touched her. She's touched me. She's held me. She's talked to me. She's given me a foundation. She took and held me in my arms like men hold a pipe. And she took and blessed me and introduced me to the spirit powers of the world. I don't know what she prayed for me, but whatever it was, that prayer has carried me this far. Mm-hmm. The same prayers that I give every day for all of my granddaughters, all of my grandchildren. So you all do that. You are risk takers as border walkers. You are those voices for change. And I have had my journey has been difficult at times. It hasn't been easy, but it has been, in looking back at it, a wonderful journey. You all have made it beautiful. And I want to thank you today and the others here for all that you have done for me. And I wish you all well. I wish you all continuing success and joy and long life. Know I love you. Mm-hmm.